Cassette number 26. Matter. Zoon. Recognized, yet with all of equal importance, is that the entire solar system equally revolves upon its axis, but in a cycle so vast as to be beyond the powers of ordinary man to comprehend, and which necessitates mathematical formulae of great intricacy. Page 1084. The orbital path of the solar system in the heavens around its cosmic center is now being sensed, and the general drift also of our constellation is being taken into consideration as a welcome hypothesis. Scientists have not yet admitted into their calculations the fact that our solar system is revolving around a cosmic center along with six other constellations of even greater magnitude in the majority of cases than ours, only one being approximately of the same magnitude as our solar system. This cosmic center, in turn, forms part of a great wheel, till, to the eye of the illumined seer, the entire vault of heaven is seen to be in motion. All the constellations, viewing them as a whole, are impelled in one direction. The old commentary expresses this obscure truth as follows, quote, "The one wheel turns. One turn alone is made, and every sphere and suns of all degrees follow its course. The night of time is lost in it, and Kalpas measure less than seconds in the little day of man. 10 million million Kalpas pass, and twice 10 million million Brahmic cycles, and yet 1 hour of cosmic time is not completed. Within the wheel, forming that wheel, are all the lesser wheels from the first to the tenth dimension. These, in their cyclic turn, hold in their spheres of force other and lesser wheels. Yet many suns compose the cosmic one. Wheels within wheels, spheres within spheres, each pursues his course and attracts or rejects his brother, and yet cannot escape from the encircling arms of the mother. When the wheels of the fourth dimension, of which our sun is one, and all that is of lesser force and higher number, such as the eighth and ninth degrees, turn upon themselves, devour each other, and turn and rend their mother, then will the cosmic wheel be ready for a faster revolution." Close quote. It will therefore be apparent that the power of man to conceive of these whirling constellations, to measure their interaction and to realize their essential unity, is not as yet great enough. We are told that even to the liberated Daihan Chohan, the mystery of that which lies beyond his own solar ring pass knot is hid. Page 1085. Certain influences indicate to him, and certain lines of force demonstrate to him, the fact that some constellations are knit with his system in a close and corporate union. We know that the Great Bear, the Pleiades, Draco, or the Dragon, are in some way associated with the solar system, but as yet he knows not their function, nor the nature of the other constellations. It must also be remembered that the turning of our tiny systemic wheel and the revolution of a cosmic wheel can be hastened or retarded by influences emanating from unknown or unrealized constellations whose association with a systemic or a cosmic logos is as mysterious relatively as the effect individuals have upon each other in the human family. This effect is hidden in logoic karma and is beyond the ken of man. The wheels, in order of their importance, might be enumerated as follows. The wheel of the universe, or the sum total of all stars and starry systems. A cosmic wheel, or a group of seven constellations. These are grouped according to A, their magnitude, B, their vibration, C, their color, D, their influence upon each other. These cosmic wheels, according to the esoteric books, are divided into 49 groups, each comprising millions of septenary constellations. For purposes of study by the adepts, they are each known by a symbol, and these 49 symbols embody all that can be apprehended anent the size, magnitude, quality, vibratory activity, and objective of those great forms through which an existence is experiencing. The Chohans of high degree know the 49 sounds which give the quality of the consciousness aspect of these great beings, who are as far removed from the consciousness of our solar logos as the consciousness of man is removed from that of a crystal. Page 1086. The knowledge thus appreciated by the Chohans is naturally but theoretical, and conveys only to their relatively limited consciousness the general nature of the group of constellations, and the force occasionally emanating from them, which has at times to be taken into calculation. For instance, the interest wakened in the public mind lately by the giant star Betelgeuse in the constellation of Orion is due to the fact that at this particular time there has been an interplay of force between our tiny system and this giant one, and communication between the two informing existences. Systemic wheels, or the atomic life of individual constellations. These again are divided into 343 groups, known to the adept again through a series of characters forming a word, which, through its ideographic nature, conveys essential information to the adept. The ideograph for our solar system may in part be disclosed, not the characters themselves, but a digest of that for which the characters stand. Our solar system is disclosed as being a system of the fourth order, having its force centers upon the fourth cosmic plane and making its objective manifestation from the fourth systemic plane via the fourth subplane of the systemic physical plane. B, blue in color, esoteric orange and green. C, a system which is occultly known to the adept as in an airy sign in which the bird can fly. D, a system formed of three fires which form a fourth. E, a system in which the bird has four tail feathers and hence can occultly mount to a higher plane and find its fifth. Page 1087. F, a system which has four major cycles and minor periods of manifestation which are multiples of that figure. G, a system which in the alchemical phraseology of the masters is viewed as being a product of the fourth itself in process of transmutation, and the living stone with four shells. All this can be seen at one glance by the master who has the ideographic word before him. Other ideograms are available for his use, which give him the immediate information as he studies the influences contacting our solar system. Planetary wheels. For these there are 10 modes of expression. Chain wheels, called in some of the books rounds. The revolution of any one globe. The cycle of the three worlds. The wheel of a plane. The revolution or cyclic appearance of a kingdom in nature. This applies within a scheme, but only to the four kingdoms in objective appearance. The revelation of a planetary center producing monadic appearance. The monadic wheel, or the periodic appearance of units of the fourth creative hierarchy. Thus, we pass down the scale through all the kingdoms and forms till we arrive at the tiny revolution of an atom of substance. In concluding our remarks concerning the diverse wheels of the universe, we will touch with brevity upon the wheels which concern the human monad. This is a subject but little dealt with as yet, though a few words have been spoken anent the egoic wheel. It must be borne in mind that the evolution of the monad is a much more intricate thing than appears in the books as yet given to the public. Page 1088. In those books, the development of consciousness and its transition through the kingdoms of nature are the points dwelt upon. Yet there have been earlier cycles which it will be only possible to comprehend as the history and evolution of the planetary logoi become gradually revealed. They are parts of his body of manifestation, cells within that greater vehicle, and thus vitalized by his life, qualified by his nature, and distinguished by his characteristics. This will take the history, therefore, of a monad back to the earlier kalpas. Such history it is not possible to reveal, and no purpose would be served by such a revelation. The fact only can be touched upon, as it must be considered along general lines if the true nature of the self is to be accurately known. We might consider that the monad of the human being passes through cycles analogous to those through which the heavenly man travels. There is first the vast cycle of unfoldment through which a spark passes. This covers the period of three major solar systems, that preceding this one, the present, and the succeeding one. In these three, the totality of the cosmic past, present, and future, embodying the three aspects of the divine life of the solar logos, are carried to the point of perfection in an individualized monad. It must be remembered that in this solar system, for instance, certain developments are only recapitulations of evolutionary processes undergone in an earlier solar system. The clue to this lies in the consideration of the manasic or mind principle. The solar angels, the intelligent individualizing factor, were, from certain angles of vision, the product of an earlier system, and only waited for the time in the present system when the forms in the three kingdoms had reached the point of synthetic development which made it possible for them to be impressed and influenced from on high. Page 1089. We have in this concept an idea analogous to the entering in of those monads during Atlantean days who, having individualized upon another chain, tarried in the interplanetary spaces until Earth conditions were such that the occupation of adequate forms became possible. The correspondence is not exact, but is indicative of the truth. The vast cycle of unfoldment, which rendered later evolution possible, preceded this solar system and might be regarded as the monadic correspondence to a cosmic wheel. In the old commentary, this point of development is hinted at in the words, quote, "The fifth did not appear as the product of the present. The five spokes of that wheel had each a cycle of development, and one in which they were welded at the center." Close quote. The monad has cycles analogous, though on a miniature scale, to those of the one life who permeates and animates all lesser lives. Certain of these cycles cover periods of time so vast and so long past that their history can only be conveyed to the investigating adepts through the medium of sound and symbol. The details of that development are lost in the night of other kalpas, and all that can be seen are the results. The cause must be accepted as existing, though for us remaining inexplicable until the higher initiations are taken. In the fact of the turning of the monadic wheel covering the period of three solar systems lies hid the mystery of monadic self-will and the secret as to why some of the monads refused to incarnate whilst others fell and thus proceeded along the present lines of evolution. They refused to incarnate because of internal group conditions brought about through the evolutionary processes of the past kalpas. It will therefore be apparent that the question of what constitutes sin and evil is far more intricate than even appears upon the surface. From our limited vision, it appears to be sin to fall into incarnation, and equally sin or self-will, self-satisfaction, to remain unevolved upon the higher planes. Page 1090. Yet both groups follow the law of their being, and the solution of the mystery lies in that which is to come. If the student will, with care, meditate upon the fact that the three lower planes, the mental, the astral, and the physical, form the dense physical body of the planetary logos, and are therefore no principle, it will become apparent to him that through necessity, certain units or cells in the body are more active in space and time than others. He must also bear in mind that groups of monads come into incarnation according to which center in a heavenly man of a particular planetary scheme, or which center of the solar logos, is in process of vivification or cyclic activity, and that certain of the centers of a solar logos and this particular solar system are in a condition of partial pralaya through the process of the absorption of the lower solar life forces by the centers of higher vitality. Again, he must remember that the entire aspect of the divine life is not intended to reach its full unfoldment at any time in this solar system, but must wait for the vitalizing impulses of a later. This is due to the fact that there exist in this solar system effects of causes originating in earlier kalpas, or, to word it otherwise, the karmic seeds of earlier logoic activities. Our solar logos has not yet attained true rhythm, but for millennia of cycles, the equilibrizing process must go on. Nor has our planetary logos achieved equilibrium and the even balancing of forces. Therefore, until his point in evolution and his objective vision is known, and it is known also which center in the solar body is vitalized by his life, it will be the part of wisdom to refrain from dogmatic assertion and a too free utterance in connection with incarnating and non-incarnating monads. All are turning upon the monadic cosmic wheel. Each is being swept into some form of activity upon the lesser revolution of this particular systemic wheel, but not all, in any particular cycle, are to be found revolving upon a specific planetary wheel. Page 1091. Many wait for development and for more appropriate seasons in interplanetary spaces, and some must wait until the entering in of a new Mahamanvantara. Students should bear carefully in mind the words of H.P.B. where he tells students of the secret doctrine that the stanzas and their commentary deal primarily with our particular planetary logos. This is oft forgotten. It may interest students to know that there are certain colors veiling these groups of non-incarnating monads at present totally unknown to humanity. These will sweep into the consciousness of the human being in another solar system, or after the taking of the sixth initiation. All that we have on Earth are reflections of the true colors, and likewise the reflection of the lowest aspect. Every color in the cosmos exists in three forms. 1. The true color. 2. The illusory appearance of the color. 3. Its reflection. The reflection is that with which we are familiar. The appearance, or that which veils the reality, is contacted and known when we see with the eye of the soul, the eye of Shiva, and the true color is contacted after the fifth kingdom has been passed through and group consciousness is merging in that of the divine. Footnote: color, originally meant a covering, from root shalari, to cover or hide, also occultari, to hide. Symbology of colors. The language of the prism, of which the seven mother colors have each seven suns, that is to say 49 shades or suns between the seven, which graduated tints are so many letters or alphabetical characters. The language of colors has therefore 56 letters for the initiate. Of these letters, each septenary is absorbed by the mother color, as each of the seven mother colors is absorbed finally in the white ray, divine unity symbolized by these colors. Return to text. Students will therefore note that the monadic cosmic wheel can be visioned in terms of true color and is seen by the illumined seer as the combined blending of the primary colors of the three solar systems. Page 1092. The monadic systemic wheel, which concerns this solar system alone, is distinguished by being the totality of the seven colors of the seven heavenly men, and from the vision of the adept of the fifth initiation, is the sum total of the primary colors of the egoic groups of the differing planetary schemes. The monadic planetary wheel, which concerns the particular group of monads incarnating in a particular scheme, is seen by the seer as the blending of egoic groups, but with the difference that the color is a dual one, and the coloring of the personality ray of the incarnating ego is also seen. The egoic cycle, or the turning of the wheel of the incarnating ego, is of the most practical interest to man, and has already been somewhat dealt with. For purposes of clarity and elucidation, this wheel may also be seen as turning in three cycles, and as making three kinds of revolutions, covering varying periods of time. There is first the wheel of the chain, or the cycling of the monad around an entire chain, and its passage through all the globes and kingdoms. The consideration of this is complicated by the fact that in any particular chain, the monads seldom begin and end their evolution. They seldom emerge, pass through their cycle, and achieve their objective. It is not possible to dissociate a chain from its preceding or succeeding chain. Many monads who achieved self-consciousness in the moon chain only entered into renewed activity in the middle of the fourth root race. Others who have individualized on this earth will not succeed in reaching their goal upon this planet. There is here a correspondence to systemic evolution, and there is an analogy between the monads who refused to incarnate and the egos who were unable to take bodies in the Lemurian or third root race. Page 1093. There is next the wheel of a globe, or the process of evolution upon any particular globe. The student must bear in mind that the monad, after planetary dissolution, passes the time between incarnations on other and subtler globes, which are the correspondents to the interplanetary and intersystemic spheres. There is also the wheel of a race, or the lesser cycle of incarnations, forming a definite series, wherein the incarnating monad cycles through a number of lives in a particular race. All these cycles of periodic manifestation are concerned primarily with the appearance or the manifesting of the sparks upon one or other of the three planes in the three worlds, or in some part of the physical body of the planetary logos. The lesser cycles deal with this. The greater turning of the wheel concerns also the appearance or flashing forth of the sparks in the planetary or systemic etheric body, or on the four higher planes of our solar system. We can picture to ourselves the glory of this concept, the downpouring of the streams of fiery sparks, their flashing forth into points of intensified fire as they meet conditions which produce occult ignition, and the constant circulation of the 49 fires constructed of the 60,000 million human monads and the countless streams of Deva monads, fire on every side, a network of fiery rivers of living energy, focal points of intensified brilliancy, and everywhere the sparks. There are a few more remarks to be made anent the turning of the various wheels, and we can then take up the consideration of motion and the sheaths. Within all those wheels which we have enumerated are many lesser wheels, all governed by the same laws, actuated by the same three forms of activity, and all in their totality forming one great whole. It will be apparent to all conscientious students that the founders of the symbolical method managed to convey in the symbol of the wheel an idea of the triplicity of all atomic activity. Page 1094. A. The central point of active positive force, the hub. B. The negative stream of life, the radiating spokes. C. The sphere of activity itself, the effect of the interplay of these two. The circumference of the wheel. If the student can picture those wheels in activity, if he can visualize all parts of the wheel as composed of lesser living wheels, and if he can work into his picture a hint of the interplay of all these fiery essences colored with certain predominant hues, he will become aware of conditions and see before him a picture which is ever apparent to the illuminated seer. If before doing this he can vision the whole of the systemic wheel as in a constant state of circulation, in which the tiny lesser lives are impelled by the force of the central solar life to pass throughout the extent of the wheel so that they come in contact with all parts of the wheel, and are impressed by all the varying types of power substance, then the general nature of the method can be somewhat ascertained. We use the term motion. But what do we really mean? Simply and literally, the manifestation of the energy generated through the bringing together of certain aspects of energy and the triple result thereby produced. The activities resulting from this stream of dynamic electrical energy emanating from some center which sweeps into response all that it contacts and which holds the responsive units in some form or another. From the occult standpoint, all that manifests is spheroidal in form, and is appropriately called a wheel. Yet, in dense physical manifestation, the forms are diverse and many, and unless etheric vision is present, the spheroidal forms of all lives are not apparent. How can this be explained? There are three major reasons for this illusion, and these we might here touch upon, finding in the word illusion the key to the mystery. Footnote: Maya or illusion. The word Maya is one which has to be properly understood by you in order that you may catch the spirit of the ancient philosophy. The derivation which is given for the word is Ma plus Ya, or not that. Maya is, therefore, a power that makes a thing appear as what it is not, or a power of illusion that arises out of limitation in the ancient concept of a true unity, periodically appearing as multiplicity by the power of Maya that coexists with that unity. Return to text, page 1095. We have been told in connection with the dense physical body that it is not considered a principle and is not, in this second solar system, expressing those qualities which are characteristic of the solar logos and his present incarnation. We are told further that the grosser, dense forms of substance, all that is objective and tangible upon the physical plane, are vibrating to a key which is characteristic of the preceding system, being a leftover, if so it might be expressed, of an earlier kalpa. These two points must be carefully borne in mind and latitude allowed for them when endeavoring to express the truth anent motion. Therefore, a number of the atoms of matter are as yet governed by an internal life which has for its main distinctive feature the faculty of a much closer adhesion and a decisiveness of grouping that is inherently characteristic of the present body of manifestation of the solar system. We must remember when considering this that all that is dense and gross in all forms concerns only those forms on the three lower subplanes of the lower systemic planes. The forms are constructed of matter of all the planes, but the percentage of gross matter is, as we can plainly see, but small. Interaction for the mineral monad exists and completely negatives the vibration of the three lower subplanes of the physical plane. It passes eventually into forms which are more closely allied to the true form. The mineral monad has a problem slightly at variance with that of the other kingdoms, for it is specifically an expression of the lives which were classed as the failures of a previous solar system and which were doomed to immerse themselves in the forms of the mineral kingdom. Page 1096. Liberation for man comes when he succeeds in freeing himself from the vibration of the three lower planes of our solar system, from that part of the logoic manifestation which constitutes his dense body, and which he does not therefore regard as a principle. It will consequently be apparent that there is a correspondence worthy of study to be found in the relation between the mineral monad, a human being, and a solar logos. Viewing these three as an esoteric triplicity, much light may be gained by meditation upon them as A, the residual vibration of System 1, B, the medial point of activity of System 2, C, the subjective energy of the present system. In the comprehension of this, and in the realization that there are forces present in nature which are in the nature of leftovers, we have the clue to much of the puzzling side of manifestation, to the cruelty and death, the suffering, and the agony which are seen in the vegetable and animal kingdoms. In the term animal kingdom, I include man's physical body. We have also the clue to some aspects of the left-hand path, and a clue to the problem of the basic cause of the appearance of such existences as black magicians. Just as no human being can escape the effects of energy generated by him in an early life, so the solar logos himself is working out, and so held back by influences which are the result of his earlier activities in System 1. The dense physical forms are an illusion because they are due to the reaction of the eye to those forces about which we have been speaking. Etheric vision, or the power to see energy substance, is true vision for the human being, just as the etheric is the true form. But until the races further evolved, the eye is aware of and responds to the heavier vibration only. Page 1097. Gradually it will shake itself free from the lower and coarser reactions and become an organ of true vision. It might be of interest here to remember the occult fact that as the atoms in the physical body of the human being pursue their evolution, they pass on and on to ever better forms and eventually find their place within the eye, first of animals and then of man. This is the highest dense form into which they are built and marks the consummation of the atom of dense matter. Occultly understood, the eye is formed through the interplay of certain streams of force, of which there are three in the animal and five in the human being. By their conjunction and interaction, they form what is called the triple opening, or the fivefold door, out of which the animal soul, or the human spirit, can look out upon the world of illusion. The final reason why the spheroidal true form of everything is apparently not seen on the planet can only at this stage be expressed through a quotation from an old esoteric manuscript in the Master's archives. Quote, "The vision of the higher sphere is hidden in the destiny of the fourth form of substance. The eye looks downwards, and behold, the atom disappears from view. The eye looks sideways, and the dimensions merge, and again the atom disappears. Outward it looks, but sees the atom out of all proportion. When the eye negates the downward vision and sees all from within outwards, the spheres again will be seen." Close quote. End of side one, cassette number 26, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1097. Continued on side two. Side two, cassette number 26, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Continuing section two, division E, Motion on the Plane of Mind, on page 1097. Roman numeral 5, Motion and the Form-Building Impulse. 1. Motion and the Mental Sheath. In the first section of this treatise, we dealt somewhat with various phases of activity when considering fire by friction and the fiery motion of substance itself. We will only touch on some further aspects of the matter, for it is necessary that the student should bear in mind certain things. Page 1098. He should endeavor to ascertain the relationship between the universal mind, or the systemic mind, and cosmic mind, and seek to comprehend the purpose of the mental sheath, which is one of the most interesting of the various bodies on account of its fiery, gaseous constitution. He should also seek to bring about through meditation that mental control and alignment which will result in stabilization and a responsiveness to causal impression. This will lead to the transmission of egoic instruction to the man on the physical plane. Certain points in connection with the mental sheath require emphasizing, though it is not our purpose to do more than call attention to their nature. Under the law of correspondence, the student should be able to arrive at certain conclusions and judge wisely the assignment of purpose and place to the particular set of lunar petries who form the vehicle. The mental body is composed of only four types of essence, whereas the astral body and the physical are formed of seven types. The devas who compose this body are grouped together as the cohorts of the fourth order, and have a close connection with that group of cosmic lives who, through the impress of their influence upon solar matter, are responsible for the fact that our solar system is a system of the fourth order. This group of lives is manipulated and controlled, in the macrocosmic sense, from cosmic mental levels via the central spiritual sun, and through what is called, in esoteric parlance, the fourth solar cavity. If students will meditate upon the nature of the human heart and its various divisions, and particularly upon one of the valves, light upon this complex problem may be forthcoming. There is a constant inflow of energy from these great entities on cosmic mental levels. This inflow is the very life itself of the solar units, who are the sum total of the four lower subplanes of the mental plane, and consequently the life of the individual units who form the mental bodies of all human beings. Page 1099. It will be apparent to all careful students that on all the planes, the fourth subplane has a peculiar and close relation to the fourth creative hierarchy, that of the human monads, and this is peculiarly the case in connection with the mental body. Through the medium of the plane number 5 and the subplane number 4, the possibility of initiation for the human being becomes a fact, and that particular form of activity which distinguishes his progress is brought about. There are therefore two main streams of energy responsible for the form of the mental sheaths. A. That emanating from the fourth subplane of the cosmic mental plane, including consequently the remaining three subplanes. B. That emanating from the aggregate of those lives who form the fourth creative hierarchy. As we know, the esoteric number of this hierarchy is 9, the exoteric number being 4. It is the blending of these two streams of force which, within the confines of the three worlds, results in the progressive activity of man. When this is coupled with the self-engendered action of the individual atoms of any sheath, we have spiral progressive motion. This is true macrocosmically and microcosmically, for the activity of the cosmic physical plane, our seven systemic planes, is largely dependent upon the coordinated activity of certain force manifestations, which might be enumerated as follows. A. That of the fourth creative hierarchy, who, in their aggregate, form the force centers. B. The emanating influences of the fourth cosmic ether, the Buddhic plane, upon which is dependent throughout the system the manifestation of that which is tangible and objective. Page 1100. C. The opening up, both macrocosmically and microcosmically, of the fourth aspect of the solar and human egoic lotus. This is the revelation of the jewel in the lotus, and macrocosmically is the perfect coordination of the three aspects through the medium of substance. This is the completion of logoic purpose, which is that of the fourth group. It might be expressed otherwise. Quote, when all is known of the significance of fourth dimensional existence, then the fourth order with the fifth will complete the sacred nine. Close quote. D. The specific alignment, interplay, or free circulation of force simultaneously through the following manifestations of the one life. 1. The logoic quaternary and equally the human. 2. The fourth systemic ether. 3. The fourth cosmic ether, the Buddhic. 4. The fourth creative hierarchy. When this has been completed, the goal universal will have been reached, and the Logos will have assumed the desired control of his physical body. The human units will be then functioning upon the Buddhic plane, and the groups of lives who form the mental bodies of the human beings, who are numerically allied with the above progression, will have equally achieved. Certain influences and forces play upon the mental sheath of any human being and produce in it that activity which is termed spiral progressive. These forces might be briefly considered as comprising the following. 1. The energies of the atoms of substance which compose the mental body. 2. The energies of the lunar father, who is the coherent life of the mental group body. These two groups concern the not-self, the third aspect of monadic manifestation. Page 1101. 3. The energies of the solar angel or father, which is the coordinating principle behind manifestation in the three worlds. 4. The energies of the intelligent lives who form the body egoic. These lives find their emanating source on other levels than the systemic. These two groups concern the egoic principle, the middle principle, which links the above and the below, and is the second aspect of monadic manifestation. 5. The energy emanating from the jewel in the lotus itself, the focal point of energy in the upper triad. This concerns the self, the highest aspect of monadic manifestation. The effects produced by the play of these five types of energy upon each other produce, through the medium of the mental unit, that which we term the mental sheath. This sheath is, after all, only the aggregate of those atoms within a specific area with which the thinker has to do, which he holds magnetically within his ring-pass knot, and which serve as the medium for his mental expression, according to his point of evolution. This same definition will be recognized as true of all atomic sheaths, and one of the things which students of the occult sciences will eventually do is to investigate the nature of the informing lives of the sheaths, the qualities of the energies influencing such lives, and the character and force of the basic underlying principles. They will thus arrive at facts concerning energies in the human kingdom which will prove of inestimable value. In order to keep the basic idea of this treatise corresponding in its various divisions, I might call your attention to the four points we considered relative to motion in the physical and astral sheaths. Page 1102. We found that the effects of such motion might be regarded as four altogether: separation, momentum, frictional activity, absorption. Separation. This separation is brought about through the initial activity of the ego, who produces the first of those forms which he intends to use during the cycle of incarnation, through the bringing together of these energies through self-engendered impulse. He, for purposes of development, identifies himself with that form and thus temporarily separates himself off from his own real self. Through the veil of mental matter, he first knows separation and undergoes his first experiences of the three worlds. This deals with separation from the highest aspect. Viewing it from the personality standpoint, separation is again to be seen, for the activity of the monadic sheath, its own internal volition, produces the formation of a sphere of activity, distinct in its nature and governed by laws of its own, which, until a certain amount of alignment has been achieved during evolution, lives its own separate existence apart from the two lower sheaths, astral and physical. Thus it can be truly said that the mind slays the real and serves as the great deluder of the self in the one case and as the great separator in another. It comes between the centralized egoic life and the personality existences. Footnote: Mind, the Slayer of the Real, from Voice of the Silence, pages 14 and 15, return to text. This life of separation becomes steadily stronger as the rotary spiral action of the mental body becomes intensified during the cycles of manifestation, and the individualized idea becomes daily more dominant. Page 1103. The Ahamkara principle, as it is called in the secret doctrine, does its work, and man becomes strongly self-centered and self-conscious in the lower connotation of the term. Footnote: Ahamkara, the I-making principle necessary in order that self-consciousness may be evolved, but transcended when its work is over. Return to text. Later, as higher energies come into play and the effort is made to balance the three types of forced manifestations in the three worlds through the three vehicles, the ego becomes aware of delusion and eventually frees himself. When this is in process of consummation during the final stages of evolution, the mental body becomes a transmitter for force currents from the egoic mind. The antaskarana between the higher mind and the mental sheath is built, and the transmitting mind body blends itself with the reflecting astral body. Thus, separation is negated. Students will note, therefore, that the goal for the mental body is simply that it should become a transmitter of the thoughts and wishes of the solar angel and should act as the agent for the triad. The goal for the astral body is that it should be the reflector in a similar way of the buddhic impulses which reach the emotional body via certain petals in the egoic lotus and the astral permanent atom. The process of equilibrizing the forces in the personality, thus producing stability and alignment, is brought about through the scientific manifestation of the electrical reactions of the three sheaths. The mental sheath is regarded in its totality of force as positive. The physical bodies are regarded as negative to the mental. The astral vehicle is the point of the at-one-ment of the energies. It is the battleground whereon the dualities are adjusted to each other and equilibrium is attained. This is the underlying thought when the words karma manasic body are used, because for two-thirds of the pilgrim's journey, this body serves a dual purpose. It is only during the later stage that a man differentiates between will and desire and between his mental body and his desire body. Page 1104. Momentum. The activity of the mental sheath and its gradually increasing rate of vibration is brought about by the inflow of energies of different kinds. These various factors, as they are brought to bear upon the mental sheath, produce an increased activity and speed in the rotary motion of the individual atoms, and also greater speed in the progress of the entire sheath. This means a more rapid transference of the atoms of low vibration out of the sheath and the substitution of atoms of high quality. It involves also more rapid transition of the various energies or increased spiral action. This is one of the factors resulting in more rapid incarnation and more rapid assimilation of the experiences learnt. Curiously enough, from the standpoint of the average thinker, this factor causes longer devachanic periods, for these cycles of interior mental consideration are of ever-increasing activity. They are cycles of intense mental adjustment and of the generation of force, until, towards the close of the cycle of incarnation, the activity which has been generated is so strong that continuity of consciousness becomes an accomplished fact. The man frequently then foregoes devachan as he needs it no more. Other results are the fourth dimensional activity of the various wheels, which begin not only to rotate, but to turn upon themselves, and the vivification of the four spirillae of the mental unit. Some of the energies which produce increased momentum in the mental sheath might be enumerated. And as the students consider them, it will again become apparent what a complicated thing human unfoldment really is. These energies are, 1, the direct increasing influence of the solar angel. This influence is felt in four stages. As the three rows of petals unfold, as the interior jewel rays forth more powerfully. Page 1105. 2, the reflex action from the physical personality, or the thought currents sent through in course of time from the physical brain. 3, the activities of the astral body. 4, the thought currents or energy units initiated by identification with groups, national, family, racial, and egoic. 5, the currents which impinge upon the mental bodies of all human beings as different rays pass in and out of incarnation. 6. The forces and energies which become active or latent during different cycles. 7. The interplay between planets or between systems and constellations, of which an illustration can be seen in the effect of Venusian energy upon our Earth. And many more factors too numerous to mention. All these energies have their effects and serve either to speed or in some cases to retard the evolutionary process. It should be borne in mind by students that all egoic groups come under the law of karma, but only as it affects the heavenly man, and not the law as it demonstrates in the three worlds. This karmic law, which is the governing impulse of his centers, will show itself in peculiar ways, and as the human monads compose those centers, each group will have its own activity problems. Will spiral through the round of being in its own peculiar manner, and will demonstrate qualities and motions different from its brothers. For instance, through withdrawal of energy, and not through basic inertia, those monads who are the sum total of the center of creative force of the heavenly man show qualities of violent reaction on the physical plane against certain laws of nature, and in the period of their transition from the lower center to the throat center of the heavenly man, betray qualities of revolt which make them a puzzle to their brothers. Page 1106. We have now to consider the frictional activity of the mental sheath and the activity of the sheath as it manifests as absorption. These two concern, let us remember, the motion of the mental sheath as a whole. The result of this activity is rotary spiral progressive action. Frictional activity. This, as is apparent from the words, deals with the fire by friction aspect of substance, and therefore with the lowest aspect of the energy of the mental sheath. The force of the life within the sheath manifests in the attractive and repulsive action of the individual atoms, and this constant and ceaseless interplay results in the occult heat of the body and its increased radiation. It is one of the factors also which produces the gradual building in of new atoms of substance, ever of a better and more adequate quality, and the expulsion of that which fails to suffice as a medium for intelligent expression. The mental unit is the synthesis of the four types of force with which we are dealing, and of the four expressions of it which we are in process of considering. Each of the groups of lives, which are the living essence of four subplanes, and which focalize through one of the spirilli of the unit, and thus influence A, the sheath itself, B, the man on the physical plane, C, part of the head center, express in greater or less degree these four qualities. It might be noted here that the groups are called certain names by some occult teachers, which names convey the idea of the active enterprise which is their predominant function. Page 1107. The lives on the fourth subplane, that on which the mental unit has its place, are called the absorbers of the above and the below, or the transmitting faces of the fourth order. They receive energy and absorb from the ego on the one hand in the first stage of the incarnation process, and on the other absorb the energies of the personality at the close of the period of manifestation. They have therefore an activity which might be regarded as corresponding to the first aspect. When it is remembered that the cosmic process repeats itself on every plane, and that the ego in the three worlds stands for the unmanifested, it will be seen that they are the primal separators and the final destroyers. The lives of the next plane, which utilize the second spirilla of the mental unit, are called the interacting points of cyclic momentum. These points, which gather momentum through the process of attraction and repulsion, represent in the mental body dual force, for it is only through the coming together and the separation of atoms, great and small, macrocosmic and microcosmic, that manifestation of any kind becomes possible. On the subplane, which is formed of lives functioning through the third spirilla, are found the points of frictional activity, or the heat producers. And these three, the absorbers, the points of momentum, and the heat producers, pour their united forces through the separated lives, which form the real barrier between the next body and the mental sheath. This is only possible when their work is unified and synthesized. The student must here remember that the lives are the expression of one life, but that one or other of the spirillae will be the agency for lives which express specific qualities. We are dealing specifically with the fourth effect of motion in the mental sheath as it manifests throughout the entire vehicle. Page 1108. Absorption. This is the faculty which produces the forms of the mental ring-pass knot, and which, at the close of the cycle, is the active principle behind devachanic manifestation. The student, through a consideration of the macrocosmic process, can arrive at a knowledge of the separation of the mental body and its individual functioning. It is anent the process of heavenly withdrawal that we are speaking. Under the law of analogy, it is not easily possible to follow the various steps and stages, and this for the following reasons. All our planes, being the cosmic physical subplanes, form the logoic physical body. At his final withdrawal from manifestation, he functions in his cosmic astral body, and the cosmic Devachan is as yet far from him and impossible to conceive of. Certain points, therefore, anent man's rest in heaven, are all that is possible for us to deal with. Absorption into Devachan is absorption into a definite stage of consciousness within the logoic physical body. Devachan, therefore, is occultly a state of consciousness, but of consciousness thinking in terms of time and space in the three worlds. It has therefore no location for the unit of consciousness, but has location from the standpoint of the heavenly man. Prakriti, matter, and consciousness are, in manifestation, inseparable. The Devachan of the occult books is connected with the consciousness of the logoic planetary body and with the gaseous subplane of the cosmic physical plane. It is consequently transcended the moment a man begins to function in the cosmic ethers, such as the fourth cosmic ether, the Buddhic plane. It is closely allied with certain karmic forces, for whilst in Devachan, the man is occupied with the aggregate of the thought forms he has built, which are essentially of an occult, a mental, and a persistent nature. Page 1109. It is in Devachan that the man shapes and polishes the stones which are built into the Temple of Solomon. It is the workshop to which the individual stones, good deeds and thoughts, are taken for fashioning after being extracted from the quarry of the personal life. Being of mental matter, Devachan might be regarded as a center or heart of peace within the periphery of the sphere of influence of the mental unit. The four spirillae form four protecting streams of force. A correspondence to this stream of force can be seen in the four rivers which emanated from the Garden of Eden. Out of this garden, man is driven into the world of physical incarnation, and the angel with the flaming sword protects the entrance, driving him back from entry until the time comes when evolution has progressed so far that he can come to the portal laden with stones which can withstand the action of fire. When he submits these stones to the fire and they stand the test, he can enter heaven again, his time, though, being limited by the nature and the quality of what he brought. When the consciousness within Devachan has absorbed all the essences of life experience, even that locality or that aspect of matter cannot enfold him, and he escapes from limitation into the causal vehicle. 2. Motion in the causal body. We have studied somewhat this activity as it manifests in fourfold fashion in the mental sheath, and the reason that there has not been much to say anent this matter has been that the mental sheath comes under the laws of the matter aspect and is subject to the same rules as are the material vehicles of all existences. It is only matter of a finer grade. The student, therefore, can apply what has been earlier said anent the astral and physical bodies to the mental body, and thus negate the necessity of our entering upon the subject in greater detail. Page 1110. The causal body differs from the Brahma aspect in that it is a fuller embodiment of the life of the second aspect. Its predominant characteristics are those of the second aspect. To study the nature of motion in the causal vehicle involves much clarity of thought and due appreciation of the nature of that body. It should here be remembered that in considering the causal body, we are dealing specifically with the vehicle of manifestation of a solar angel, who is its informing life and who is in process of constructing it, of perfecting it, and of enlarging it, and thus reflecting on a tiny scale the work of the Logos on his own plane. Each part of the causal body is actuated by a type of force emanating from some one or other great center, and it might be of interest, therefore, if we considered the component parts of this temple of the soul, if we studied the type of animating activity and arrived at a knowledge of the forces playing upon it and through it. We will take them one by one, beginning with the outer row of petals, the knowledge petals. These are the petals which represent the lowest aspect of the triad and are responsive to the lowest forms of egoic force. These petals are three in number and come under the influence of certain streams of activity. A. One stream of energy emanates from the lower triad of permanent atoms, particularly the physical permanent atom, via that one of the three petals called the knowledge petal. The stream of force engendered in the lower self circulates in a triple stream, the reflection in the lower self of the threefold path to God, around the atomic triangle at the base of the egoic lotus. When of sufficient strength and purity, it affects the outer row of petals. Page 1111. This begins to be felt during the third period of man's evolution when he is an average intelligent unit or atom. This energy, when it blends with the inherent life of the atomic lives which form the petals, produces eventually that intimate fusing of soul and body which makes man a living soul. B. Another stream of energy emanates in time from the second tier of petals when in activity. This second tier is peculiarly instinctive with the life and quality of the Manasaputra in manifestation. The second tier of petals in any egoic lotus is the one that gives us the key to the nature of the solar angel, just as the outer tier is, to the inner vision of the adept, a clue to the point in evolution of the personality. By looking at the egoic lotus, the seer can tell the nature of the personal self through the condition of the atomic triangle and the outer tier of petals, higher self through the color and arrangement of the central tier of petals. This tier gives the family of the solar angel through the arrangement of atomic lives which form the petals and the circulation of the streams of forces in those petals. Monad, through the inner circle of petals, its stage of lower awareness is revealed in a similar way. The number of the ray concerned is known through the quality of the light of the concealed jewel. In all these petals, groups of lives, solar and otherwise, are concerned, and streams of energy from them focus through the petals. This is apparent to the man who has the key. It is a curious fact that the streams of force which form the petals and which are in constant flux produce apparently key symbols within the periphery of the egoic wheel and thus reveal themselves through their activity. Page 1112. C. A third type of energy is that which, at the close of evolution, makes itself felt through the inner circle of petals, and which is the result of an inflow of monadic force, or Atma. D. Finally, therefore, when the petals are unfolded, they are therefore transmitters of life or energy from three sources. 1. The lower self, lunar petri, knowledge petals. 2. Ego, solar angel, love petals. 3. Monad, Father in Heaven, sacrifice petals. It then becomes possible for a still higher form of energy to be felt, that which is the energy of the center of the body of the heavenly man, or planetary logos, and which uses the jewel in the lotus as its focal point. In this summation, we have dealt with the main types of energy manifesting in the egoic or causal body. Certain other influences must likewise be considered in connection with the outer tier of petals. E. There is the energy reaching directly to the knowledge petals from the manasic permanent atom. The permanent atoms of the spiritual triad, as well as the bodies which are built around them, bring in certain groups of deva lives which have not as yet been much considered. They are not the lunar petris, as that term is commonly understood, but have a direct connection with what is called the cosmic moon, or to that dying solar system which has the same relation to our system as the moon has to the earth chain. This cosmic moon transmits its energy to the manasic atomic subplane via the planet Saturn. Page 1113. It is a triple energy, and there is an esoteric connection between this triple energy and Saturn's rings. The old commentary expresses this truth about an interesting group of sons of Manas as follows. Quote, These sons of mind clung to the old and dying form and refused to leave their mother. They chose to pass into dissolution with her. But a younger son, Saturn, sought to rescue his brothers, and to this end he built a triple bridge between the old and new. This bridge persists and forms a path whereon escape is possible. Some escaped and came to the help of the incarnating sons of mind who had left the mother for the father. The greater gulf was bridged. The lesser gulf persisted and must be bridged by the living sons of mind themselves. Close quote. This latter clause refers to the building of the Antaskarana. The energy transmitted from the manasic permanent atom of each incarnating jiva, its union with its reflection, the energy of the mental unit, and the triple stream of force thus created on the mental plane, has its planetary reflection in the relation of Saturn to another planetary scheme, and the three rings which are energy rings and symbols of an inner verity. F. Energy also pours in upon the knowledge petals from the egoic group, or from the aggregated knowledge petals of all the other lotuses in the group affiliated with any particular solar angel. These groups have been earlier dealt with. G. Energy is transmitted also to the petals via the groups and emanations from those planetary schemes and streams of force which form the outer petals of that great center which is our solar system, and which we are told is seen from the higher planes as a 12-petaled lotus. These streams do not emanate from the seven sacred planets, but from other planetary bodies within the solar ring pass knot. Page 1114. Streams of force from the sacred planets play upon the central tier of petals. Herein lies a hint to the wise student and a clue to the nature of the lower aspect of the solar angel. The love wisdom petals. The streams of energy playing upon and through this second tier of petals closely resemble those already dealt with, but originate in differing groups of lives, lunar and solar. A. The lowest form of energy reaching this circle emanates from the lower self via the astral permanent atom and the second petal of the outer tier. It is transmuted astral energy. It is more powerful than its correspondents in the first tier, owing to the inherent nature of the astral body and the fact that it is augmented by the energy of the outer tier itself. This is one of the factors which brings about the more rapid progress made towards the close of the evolutionary period. There are certain streams of force in the evolution of the monad which might be regarded as embodying for it the line of least resistance, and they are specifically, beginning at the lowest, A. Emanations from the vegetable kingdom, B. Astral energy, C. The energy of the second circle of petals, D. Buddhic force, E. The activity of the second logos, planetary or solar. This is, of course, only true of this solar system, being the system of regenerative love. B. Another form of influencing energy originates in the inner circle of petals, which is the focal point of force for the monad, considered as Atma. Page 1115. It must be pointed out that the streams of force which form the petals of will have a dynamic activity and, when in action, produce very rapid unfoldment. It is the inner of the two types of force. Their mutual interplay provides the necessary stimulus and results in the opening of the bud and the revelation of the jewel. The other types of energy find their correspondence with those already enumerated, but I seek only to mention one of them, that one which reaches the second tier of love petals via the Buddhic permanent atom. The energy thus originating is of a peculiarly interesting kind, being the basic energy of all manifestation, and the sum total of the forces which form the sevenfold heart of the physical sun, and which are located within its sheltering luminosity. They, in their turn, are transmitters of the life impulses from the heart of the central spiritual sun, so that we have a direct graded chain of transmitting energies. A. the heart of the central spiritual sun, B, the sevenfold heart of the physical sun, C, the Buddhic devas to D, the central circle of petals, E, the astral permanent atom, F, the heart center within the head, G, the heart center. This Buddhic energy is the sum total of the life force of Vishnu, or the sun, who is the transmitter and representative of a still greater cosmic deity. All the above serves to demonstrate the oneness of the tiniest unit with the one great informing life and shows the integral beauty of the scheme. The life of the greatest cosmic Lord of Love pulsates in infinitesimal degree in the heart of his tiniest reflection, and for this reason the atom man can likewise say, I too am God. His life is mine. Page 1116. The sacrifice petals. The energies or forces flowing through and thus producing activity in the inner tier of petals, the sacrifice petals, are again similar in nature to those already enumerated, plus a definite stimulation of power in two directions. One stimulating influence comes from the will aspect of the monad, and thus, through transmission, from the first aspect of the planetary logos, and the other emanates from the sacred bud which veils the jewel. This is a particularly strong vibration because when the inner circle is unfolded, the jewel is revealed, and the three veils or sacred petals open successively when the three tiers unfold. It is thus apparent what numerous energizing agencies are responsible for the motion, occultly understood, of the egoic lotus. There is the inherent life of the atomic units forming each petal and the circulatory life of the petal itself, regarding it as an individual unit. There is likewise the life of the circle of three petals, and to this we must add the unified activity of the outer three circles, or the blending of knowledge forces absorbed from the personal self, of love forces, which are the natural energies of the solar angel, and of sacrifice forces pouring in from the monad. Thus we have a marvelous aggregate of streams of energies, all representing interior and still greater, because cosmic, energies. Finally, we have the dynamic force of the jewel at the heart, which is itself the focal point for the life of the planetary logos and through the planetary logos of all the other logoi. Thus, the potentialities latent in the incarnating jiva are stupendous, and he can become as God, provided he submits to the evolutionary process and does not refrain from being stretched upon the wheel. Page 1117. Thus the expansions of consciousness which will admit an individual point of spiritual life into the councils and the wisdom of the deity are no idle promise, but are guaranteed by the very constitution of the vehicle employed and the place in the scheme of the developing point, as the ego is sometimes called. Naught in time and space can hinder, for every form, being simply an expression of energized life, tends to serve every other form. Stimulation of some kind, the tendency to increase the vibration of contacting streams of energy, the accentuation of the activity of each centralized point as it contacts other points in the general heightening of the vibration through the interplay of those forces, all this sweeps the entire system on to its consummation and to the revelation of the glory which shall some day be revealed. All these forces form the aggregate of what is called phohatic life. As the system, or the body of the logos, is carried forward through the energy in all its parts, so is each infinitesimal part speeded on to its similar individual glorification. The many which form the all, and the units which constitute the one, cannot be differentiated as the consummation is achieved. They are merged and lost in the general beatific light, as it is sometimes called. We can then extend the concept somewhat further and realize the cosmic interplay which is likewise being carried forward. we can picture the cosmic stimulation and intensification which proceeds as constellations form the units in the whole instead of planets or human atoms. Whole suns with their allied systems in their immensity play the part of atoms. Thus some idea may be gained of the unified purpose underlying the turning of the great wheel of the cosmic heaven, and the working through of the life purposes of those stupendous existences who hold a position in the cosmic hierarchy similar to that of the one about whom naught may be said. Page 1118. It is not possible to give students an adequate idea of the beauty of the egoic lotus when it has reached the stage of complete unfoldment. The radiancy of its color is not here referred to, but the brilliancy of the fires and the rapid scintillation of the ceaselessly moving streams and points of energy. Each petal pulsates with quivering fire points, and each tier of petals vibrates with life, whilst at the center glows the jewel, raying forth streams of energy from the center to the periphery of the outermost circle. The fires of living energy circulate around each individual petal, and the method of interweaving and the circulation of the fires is, as may be well realized, sevenfold in nature according to the sevenfold nature of the logos involved. Each circle of petals becomes, as evolution proceeds, likewise active and revolves around the central jewel, so that we have not only the activity of the petals, not only the activity of the living points or the deva lives within the petal circumference, but likewise the unified activity of each tier of the threefold lotus. At a specific stage in evolution, prior to the opening of the central veiling bud, the three tiers of petals, considered as a unit, begin to revolve so that the entire lotus appears to be in motion. At the final stages, the central circle of petals opens, revealing that which is hid, and revolves around the jewel, only in a contrary direction to the rapidly circulating outer lotus. The reason may not here be revealed, for it is hid in the nature of the electric fire of spirit itself. End of side 2, cassette number 26, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1118. Continued on cassette number 27.